So hello everyone and welcome back to Contagious Conversations. We're so excited to be here. I'm here with my colleague Brenna and two fabulous infection preventionists from the international space, which we're really excited to talk to you guys and get to know you all today and continue with this conversation about the backgrounds that we have as infection preventionists, what we bring to the field, and just kind of dive in and understand a little bit more about the backgrounds that we come from and how we contribute to the field of infection prevention and control, and really what those backgrounds should be. That's our contagious conversation that we're having right now, is trying to understand that space of what should our backgrounds be in the infection prevention and control department. And I'm really excited to hear more from our colleagues today. Without further ado, let's go ahead and introduce the both of you. And I will let you guys do introductions instead of myself introducing the both of you. So take it away.
Hi everybody. It's great to be here, and hello to everyone. My name is Sinead Creedon and I'm working in the University College Cork in Ireland. I'm the director of the PG Cert in Infection Prevention and Control, but I also have a long-standing history in infection prevention and control as well. I have worked in the UK in the earlier part of my career, but I've been working in Ireland for the vast, I suppose, the last 20 years. So I'll give my age away there. So I'm of a huge interest in burnout and occupational injury and leadership and organizational issues within infection prevention and control. And hopefully I'll be able to contribute to some of the questions today. Mohammed, over to you.
Yeah, hi. I'm Mohammed Halwani, and I work as a professor and consultant in infection control in Saudi Arabia. And I have actually a long journey that I spent in infection control. You can say that I'm one of the people who help in establishing infection control in Saudi Arabia. And I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, I am so excited to hear more from each of you. I know Shanae has done some amazing research. She's finishing up her doctorate degree. I've been wrapt interest around her work on burnout. And I think that's another contagious conversation. But for this, I'm curious, could you share a little bit about your personal journeys into infection prevention?
Yeah, so I suppose I started off in my 20s in London, and I went into infectious diseases and tropical medicine at the Regional Unit for Infectious Disease and Tropical Medicine at the Northwick Park Hospital. So I became what was known as a ward sister. So I guess a clinical nurse manager in that unit for a number of years. I was became really interested in infection prevention control as a generalized subject. And it wasn't until I returned to Ireland in 2001 that I actually went into my first role as an infection preventionist. So that was in one of the larger hospitals in Cork City in the south of Ireland. And I've kind of been in and out of it ever since. And I also worked in one of the regional hospitals in Cork here during the pandemic, which was, I mean, who does not want to work through a pandemic if you're working in infection prevention control? So I was drawn back into it from another role. And after that, then I ended up working as a lecturer and PhD student in University College Cork.
Wow, what an awesome path. What about you, Mohammed?
Well, actually, I did my PhD, MSc in University of Wales, College of Medicine at Cardiff, Wales. I did MSc in medical microbiology, and from that MSc, actually, I worked in the project on infection control. And this is how I actually knew about infection control and became something very attractive to me. So I did a PhD after that in University of Nottingham, also in the UK. And that was purely infection control. So after that, I came back to Saudi Arabia, worked for a year, and then went to US to do a postdoctoral fellowship in infection control and hospital epidemiology at University Hospital of Johns Hopkins. After that, I came back and I worked in the Ministry of Health for some time, and then I transferred my job to the academia, and I work in Al Baha University Faculty of Medicine, which actually have the advantage to teach infection control to the medical students. And now, actually, I work like 3 days a week in academia and 2 days a week as a consultant in infection control.
Wow, you both have incredible backgrounds. I don't know about you, but it's always so interesting to me to hear about how people break into the field of infection prevention and control, because it's usually such a varied path and it's so eclectic, which I think contributes some to the diversity that we see in the field of infection prevention and control, which is kind of a good segue into our conversation today, because I know we shared with you a little bit in the US, there's this debate about whether an IP background should be strictly nursing, should it be microbiology, should it be public health? So I'm just, curious in your region what that standard is. What is the professional profile for the background of an infection preventionist? And how much do you see variety in where you work in your region in the hospital?
Okay, it's quite varied in Ireland. Ireland is small. It is only an island. I suppose we've kind of followed the UK pathway quite a lot. So primarily, IPC is a nursing-based role in Ireland. That's not to say that there aren't other practitioners and experts in the team. So we in the bigger hospitals in Ireland, so they would be the university hospitals or the ones affiliated with university and training. We would have a microbiologist with dedicated hours to infection prevention and control, but they might also come from their main role as microbiologists, so medical doctors. We would also have an antimicrobial pharmacist. We might have a surveillance scientist, and we may have one or more or a team of nursing infection control practitioners. So, just to give you a brief outline of how nursing works in Ireland, you'll have the staff nurses. You'll have a clinical nurse manager, you'll have clinical nurse specialists, advanced nurse practitioners, and then you'll have the management structure, such as the director of nursing or director of infection prevention control and the assistant directors. So in our local hospital here, which is the I suppose the biggest trauma hospital in the country, we have a suite of a number of infection prevention and control practitioners, along with a number of surveillance scientists, couple of microbiologists, quite a big team. But the vast majority of the day-to-day work is done by the nursing team. Now that's changing obviously since COVID and for a variety of other reasons, nurse attrition, staff attrition in general. And we do need, I suppose our training has something to do with this as well, our postgraduate training. We need a lot more public health related, domains in our practice today, and that includes epidemiology, surveillance, auditing, risk management, all that kind of stuff. So I think it is changing. It's going to take some time to break down some of the barriers and to kind of feel comfortable with introducing other, other types of healthcare workers into our roles. But I think over the next couple of years, it's definitely going to change. And indeed, there was a new document released by the European Centre for Disease Control last week, and it looks very closely at the roles of infection preventionists in general across Europe. And indeed, there are some very interesting guidelines coming out of that, which are competency-based, because we all have our competencies, no matter what jurisdiction we're working in, and also maybe credentialing and registration of IPC practitioners. So that I think will bring in a larger number of people to the workforce.
Wow, that is really dynamic. I like really want to get my hands on that document and see what it says.
It's freely available online.
What about you, Mohammed? I would love to hear a little bit more again about what you're seeing on your end.
I mean, we're not that different. Yes, nurses are most of the people who work as infection preventionists, but we do actually have microbiologists, lab specialists, and also public health professionals who actually have a degree in public health, like they have a bachelor degree in public health. So the thing is about these different specialties, like nurses are very good in clinical side, and also we have some doctors who want to actually continue to do infectious disease, so they have to do some training in infection control. And some of the doctors who doing the board, it's a SOD board in preventive medicine, they also spend some time, like 6 months, as part of their training in infection control. So they do get involved. With regard to surveillance, actually, we don't have special people who do surveillance. We have the nurses who get trained in doing the surveillance, but we usually stick to the CDC guidelines when we apply surveillance. So that is actually unified across the whole Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, that we usually stick to the CDC in identifying the HAI in general. So all that groups that I mentioned actually have the chance to work in infection control department as practitioners, and everybody will be involved in their role. Like, for example, people who are actually public health, they are more involved in the statistics and some of the monthly rates and all that stuff. But they do get involved also in some of the clinical ward, although in their programs, in their university programs, they did not actually do a lot of clinical, but they do get trained within a few years from joining the department.
Interesting, you just mentioned public health there, and I suppose typically you'd find postgraduate training come in under nursing for infection control and that. So in UCC, it's actually quite different. So we actually come in under public health, and I think that's really good because what I see in my courses are not just nurses from the acute sector or from long-term care, but we also have the prison service, the ambulance service. We've got, we've had a vet on our course because of the introduction of One Health. We've had lab scientists, we've had surveillance people, we've had I don't know, physiotherapists, dental staff. So it's really broad, and it's really nice to get, all of those different people involved because each person brings a different flavor to
Course.
the table.
And I'm just, here, Heather and I are in the United States, and I'm just thinking, it feels like there's an opportunity from an education perspective here. We do have some graduate, degrees, mostly, some certification programs, but at postgraduate or even, undergraduate education infection prevention is not a kind of a big thing here. I'm curious, Heather, like, what are your first reactions on this?
Yeah, no, hearing this, and I know we've had this conversation before for the States, and I'm just wondering, if I'm a lab tech, for example, or if I work in microbiology and I really want to pivot into infection prevention, that's really interesting to me that I've decided is my passion. What is the right, educational pathway for an individual that is interested in pivoting into that field? What does that look like in both of your countries? Is there a pathway to be able to do that? And what could that look like globally, I guess?
I suppose with the teams we have in Ireland, as I said earlier, the larger hospitals incorporate all of those types of, roles into an infection prevention control team. And that is kind of governed then usually by an infection prevention control committee, which kind of reports to the board of directors or those managing the hospitals or whatever. But we're still very much traditional in Ireland in terms of, okay, if a role is advertised publicly on public jobs in Ireland, it's going to be a nursing role, but if there's a role advertised in terms of a surveillance scientist or a lab or whatever, that's going to be advertised under something else. But it might necessarily be for, infection prevention and control, but you might not know that till you actually get into the role. And then you're kind of delegated, I don't know, maybe 20 hours a week to an IPC and another 20 hours a week to, general hospital services and stuff like that. So that's kind of how it is here. And we do have teams, but the traditional structure of IPC still exists. And I suppose that's how I feel our university is very well placed to bring in all the other types of healthcare workers to the teams. And, we're well placed to train them as well. As long as you have a medical or, a biosciences background, you can enter the program.
As a nurse coming into infection prevention, I always say when I first started in infection prevention, I had a huge learning curve. Like, I knew the clinical side of infection prevention and control, but somebody started talking to me about surveillance and epidemiology, and I'm it was
What's
great,
that?
until I got my public health degree, and then I was, everything made a little bit more sense. But there are learning curves on both sides, I think. And we talk a lot about that and about how do we bridge the gap of those learning curves, because I think that the variety does bring, the diversity does bring something to the team. We see things from a different perspective. Mohammed, I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, in Saudi Arabia again, it's very similar. But if you did, like, for example, if you're a lab tech and you did MSc, and you did a lot of infection control in your MSc, like the project was about something that has a direct relationship with infectious disease and especially prevention, then you can apply actually to the infection control department, especially if the post actually mentioned what are the responsibilities or the job description, and you find that you can actually, or you're capable to do that job description. So you will just go through an interview, and they check on your certificates, and of course a few questions about why you want to shift from the lab to infection control, and are you capable to do so. And of course in the during the interview, you can tell if the person is really capable to do a lot of tasks, and if he's actually having the right background to join the department. So that's how it actually happened. And usually the people who have a degree, they have a better option to be recruited in the department, especially if he had also some experience after his degree or her degree.
Yeah, that's true.
Interesting.
There's also a shift towards the behavioral sciences, as we know, and kind of systems thinking, and that all kind of plugs into quality patient safety and quality systems. And I think that's another thing that's really, coming to the fore. Well, it has come to the fore, but it's just, when you look at the new ECDC document, they're really putting those in the foreground, the kind of behavioral science bit of it and the systems thinking. And I think that's very important because we've always had a role with quality patient safety. IPC and quality patient safety goes hand in hand. I mean, I teach IPC, but I also teach IPC quality patient safety modules. So I think that's a really important part to bring in as well. And we might have people who've done postgraduate quality patient safety training, or diplomas or masters or whatever, and those people are equally entitled to a chair at the table.
I mean, I do agree about the patient safety, because I do teach patient safety module in the medical school, and infection control is part also of that module. However, we teach infection control as a part of our integration medical curriculum. So we have infection control scattered in all the curriculum. So, for example, if the module about, for example, respiratory system, then I do teach few things about how to manage a patient with respiratory infection, and that of course we'll talk about the airborne transmission and the prevention of it. So yes, I mean, but patient safety is a module by itself, and it has also something about infection control as one of the goals, patient safety goals, as you know.
What it's, I'm kind of just reacting to is I feel like, in the United States, you have a public health background, you have a laboratory background, you have a clinical background, you apply for a job. We are almost like jack of all trades, right? We learn kind of all of the micro pieces, we learn the epi pieces, we learn the clinical pieces, kind of regardless of where we came from. What I'm hearing from you, Shanae, is there seems to be more of buckets that people kind of go into based on their backgrounds. And so you're really leveraging their existing skill set versus having people really cross train. And then what I'm hearing from you, Mohammed, is that there's kind of a little bit of both. Is that fair to say? You do have some people that are very clinical, kind of stay in that lane, but it sounds like you also have people from both a public health and a micro background that are also cross training into that clinical space.
Yeah. I think in the bigger hospitals, you certainly have those teams where kind of you're almost in your own silo doing what it is you're doing. However, in the smaller organizations, you are a jack of all trades because there's nobody else to do it. You're not going to have a surveillance scientist. You're not going to have a microbiologist. So you really do have to get down to it. And I think that's where the education part comes in and is really, really important. So if you're being taught surveillance, epidemiology, qualitative and quantitative analysis in your training, then obviously you're going to be really well equipped to do that. And I suppose that's what we're seeing with the nurses that are training today. The structure is there now. You go in into a, usually it's a level 9, which is a master's level postgraduate certificate. You progress along to the diploma, and those who want to go to the master's and do a thesis, go ahead and do that. We don't have as many practitioners with PhDs, but that's coming because change is happening. And I suppose traditionally a lot of the practitioners who have PhDs are now in education. So, there's time constraints then as well. I mean, who has time to do a PhD if you're like 40, 50 hours out doing IPC at ground level every week? But yeah, so we are definitely seeing changes there, and we are seeing more nurses do the surveillance, do the auditing, do the risk assessment, and just being kind of very IPC centered when it comes to all of the different tasks and chores and interventions that need to be done.
Yeah, it's that cross training, right? You know,
Yeah.
we talk about cross training a lot of times in hospital settings in the clinical space, but even in the IP space, we're doing a lot of cross training. But leveraging people's existing skill set, I think, is something that we can learn from as well. You know, how
Yeah.
can we leverage that existing skill set and have some individual roles within departments while we are doing some of that cross training as well? So that's really interesting to hear. And I know for myself, I just dove into the international space, and it's been so interesting learning how we do things differently. And I think it's really valuable to learn how we do things differently because we can bring some of that back. And I think that's something that I hear from you that is really key, as not necessarily pushing one discipline or another out of the department entirely, but how can we cross train? How can we leverage our own, abilities and skill sets? And use that to strengthen the department.
IPC has become, it's always been complex, but it's more complex now, but it's become so scientific and data driven. And I think if we don't engage with that, and if we're not able to do that, then we're just going to be left behind. So it's a huge focus. And that goes for the, Breno, you and I have had conversations about soft skills, interpersonal, intrapersonal skills. And it's about leveraging all of those, not just the surveillance and the technical side of it, but also the behavioral side of it that's actually going to enable you as a leader, to get to the next step. And it's not about removing nursing leadership either. It's about supporting it with other roles when needs be.
Yeah, I like love that you say that because that's kind of what I was thinking is what I'm hearing from both of you is you have a system, an educational academic system that really supports providing both the technical and the soft skills necessary to help people be successful in this field. And again, I think, sitting here in the US, I think that's an opportunity for us. A lot of people, who want to get into infection prevention, if they're not clinical or they don't already work in a hospital, they're dependent on someone taking a chance on them. And then a lot of that training, that cross training happens internally inside of that department. And not all hospitals or departments have the bandwidth to provide kind of the level of education and cross training necessary. And so it sounds again like you are able to leverage kind of this external, internal, right? Infection prevention training that really allows people to get up to speed without really taxing the department. It is that, does that sound about right? Am I
Yeah, it
understanding that
does
correctly?
really. I mean, you can be recruited into a role in Ireland and in the UK as well without your actual qualification. So you might go in as a clinical nurse manager too, but once you've got your qualification complete, then you become the clinical nurse specialist in IPC. But it's you don't get paid anymore. It's a, it's the same thing, but it's almost like it's just a different name, but you've kind of been uplifted in terms of, okay, now you're a specialist, and then you're building from there, with all the other postgraduate opportunities that you might have.
Mohammed, I'm curious what your reactions are as well.
Well, we are more like the same. I mean, for people for like infection preventionist or practitioner who did a degree, for example, With few years of experience, he or she can be called a specialist, fixture control specialist, and of course, and that will be much better payment as well, because he or she will be more like supervising a group of IPCs together. Like whenever they have something, they have to go to him or her first before they actually reach the director of the department, because she or he will have more experience than others, especially with the degree and with the years of experience. So by default, he will be more experienced about managing some of the issues. But of course, at the end, they have to go to the director or the consultant of the department.
I don't know if you have this, Mohammed. In Ireland, when you start off as an infection preventionist, as a nurse, you're well, you know, even as a specialist, your role is really advisory. You don't actually, it's not an autonomous role to begin with. And you know, sometimes when you're dealing with a crisis, you just don't have that autonomy to, okay, make a decision to isolate a ward or, you know, cohort a group of people with an infection or whatever. So it can be quite frustrating when you don't have that autonomy. So what you're having to do is almost ask for permission or for have autonomy to be extended to you in crisis, you know, such as during the pandemic. And then that autonomy kind of disappears again once the crisis is over, you know. So it's one of the most frustrating things, I think, in our jurisdiction, whereby, you know, if you go in as a specialist, you've done your postgrad qualifications, you're still just in there in an advisory capacity, until you become maybe a director of infection prevention control or whatever, and then you're actually managing an actual department. So I've always found that element of the role quite frustrating when you know you can make quite a good decision and stand over it. So I'm not sure if it's the same for you, Mohammedin.
No, it's not the same. No, actually, we have the right to isolate the patient, even if the doctor refused. Or the other way around, if the, you know, because this is one of the major problems I have faced actually when I came
It
back
is.
from UK, that doctors think that the patient actually need to be isolated for like whatever time they want, like 5 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever they think that it's time to discharge the patient. But I actually struggle at the beginning to show them that the guidelines said that patient cannot stay, or this patient cannot be cohorted with this patient. And of course, the that sort of thing is usually discussed in the infection control committee, and then the hospital director, because usually the director of the infection control committee is the hospital director, so the head of the committee is the hospital director. So when you discuss these issues that we have the right to isolate the patient or take the patient out from the isolation room, and he gives us the green light to do so. So none of the doctors can stop us. We have the right, especially after COVID. We actually had stronger role in the hospitals, and people do actually respect infection control. And after that, a lot of people wanted to do infection control. A lot of nurses, a lot of doctors, they want to get involved in infection control because they found out that it's really interesting, and at the same time, it's a new challenge we all faced. So yes, the we don't know we have rights in a lot of things in our hospitals.
That's interesting. The autonomy that you both mentioned, it's interesting how that differs. I think it can differ a little bit in the States depending on where you're at. There are some departments, I believe, that have more autonomy and different regions that have more autonomy than others. It's sort of hospital dependent, I think, sometimes. But I think we definitely, in the States, push for the autonomy of the infection prevention and control department to make those decisions for the hospital. But that's an
You know,
interesting.
sorry. Okay,
Yeah, I
sorry.
would piggyback on that. You know, I think Shanae brought up a great point. You know, during the pandemic, we were given a lot more autonomy. And I feel like, you know, definitely in the States, when there is an emergency situation, there's an outbreak, there's a major exposure, some sort of major event. At least from my perspective, I think we do have a little bit more autonomy and people are more apt to listen to what we have to say in those moments. I feel like when business is kind of more, you know, the day-to-day, I think our autonomy might take more of a backseat. Would you agree with that from a US perspective, Heather?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's accurate from our perspective too. I wanted to go back to this discussion about the different disciplines and the pathways into infection prevention and control, whether those are educational, or just based on their background. Do you have certifications that you pursue in your country for infection control? And is there a specific background that's able to pursue that certification? And how much does that really play into this conversation that we're having?
No, we don't have certifications. And I always, this is how I always put it to people. In the US, you've got certification. Over here, and it's not too different really, it's more competencies. So you're working through your competency framework, but there's no certification. Now, that said, the new ECDC guidance, I think, is pointing towards certification in some shape or form. It may, it may be based in the competencies, or it may be based in something like CIC. I'm not sure yet, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, in Saudi Arabia, it's different. Well, maybe we're very similar to Ireland. Unfortunately, here in Saudi Arabia, certification is not really respected. What's respected is degrees. So you do have certification like CIC, like CPHQ, like CPPS for patient safety. But the thing is, okay, if you have this kind of certification, it might be an advantage for you, but it will not do any better in your job, okay? But if you have a degree like MSc degree, and you are a nurse and you get MSc from any international university, you will have the advantage to get a better job. You will be more respected, especially if you did some training post your qualifications. So degrees, yes, it is actually more respected than certification. Now, CIC is well known in Saudi Arabia. Most of the nurses who are actually working in the infection control department have the CIC. But the thing is, as I said, it's something for yourself. It might be an advantage, but it will not take you anywhere in the Saudi system, because even with the Saudi Council for Healthcare Specialists, the agency which actually accredited all the degrees and certifications and the degrees all the degrees or training boards, whatever. Before you practice, you have to get your certificates to be approved by this agency, which is a governmental agency. Certification is not actually even listed in your list of certificates that you have. So certification, as I said, is something for yourself. It maybe increases your knowledge, give you a kind of wow in your CV, but it's not really counted in your job application.
Yeah, it's
Very
similar here in
interesting.
terms of the more postgraduate training you've done in your subject matter, be it IPC or whatever, then the more credibility is given to you, and it's highly valued here as well. Now, that said, if we are looking to have other people come into the discipline, then a structured certification might work in Europe. It might just have the bandwidth to bring in other healthcare workers as well. So it could be an advantage. But I guess we'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
It's really interesting. What's your reaction to that, Heather?
I think it's interesting because it's kind of feels like it's on the same level in the States. I don't know if you agree, but the CIC certification is something that is valued, and that is sought after. It's, in HR job descriptions that, that's preferred that they have CIC certification. So I think there is value there. And I wonder, is that maybe because there's some more multidisciplinary backgrounds, and so we want to see that competency is there. It's a way to prove competency, I think. But it's interesting to hear again, just the differences. But hearing all of this, I'm just curious what your hope is for the future for your respective countries, regions of the world, and IPC in those regions. Where do you hope to go next? Where do you hope that we move, and in which direction, in terms of education and backgrounds and certifications conversation that we're having today? What would be your hope for the IPC field, I guess, globally, but also just in your own region?
I think there are a few big tension questions. I suppose if we were designing the IPC workforce today, would we design it in the same way as it is now? Of course we wouldn't, because we're just in a different place. And does limiting IPC to one profession strengthen safety, or does it limit it? And there's pros and cons. And at what point do we stop being advanced nursing and become something broader? And I think without pigeonholing it, I think there's a lot of space for a lot more work to be done. And I think extending some of the tasks and roles that just can't be done because we just don't have enough staff, or there's attrition, or people are leaving, or whatever, is important. But not only that, but we've got a hell of a lot of challenges in our future. If you look at AMR, look at artificial intelligence, it's not a disease, but it's endemic almost already. And all of the other things that we have to learn. We're looking at hantavirus at the moment, a very serious outbreak on one of the cruise ships that is docked off the coast of one of the Spanish islands at the moment. So it's look, when one thing ends, another thing starts. We had mpox, now we've got something else. And yeah, so I just think it's getting very busy, it's getting very technical, and we do need help because we can't run it all. That's not to say that it's not governed by nurses in a certain jurisdiction or whatever, but I definitely think there is room for more. I mean, I'm working in the School of Public Health. I've got lots of graduates in public health. The masters come up to me and go, "I'd love to work in infection control. What's my route?" And I'm like, "Well, you have to be working in epidemiology or health protection. You've got to be a nurse, you've got to be a pharmacist or a medical doctor or a microbiologist. That's kind of where you have to, you know." So it's just a pity because there is a lot of knowledge there. Population health, surveillance, epidemiology, statistics. And I think we need to tap into that resource.
That's such a valuable perspective, Mohammed.
Yeah, I mean, I wish actually if there's a possibility to have more degrees in infection control, I would love to see a bachelor degree in infection control, actually,
Be great, an
where
undergrad,
absolutely,
yeah.
yes, you can teach some clinical, like nursing part, microbiology part, and then the public health and epidemiology part. And if we did like a bachelor degree in 4 or 5 years program, that will be perfect. I think that you will be having people who are really trained in infection control, so that will be much easier for them to start immediately practicing. We have three universities that give MSc in infection control now in Saudi Arabia. But the thing is, like it's paid program, so not everyone can actually apply for that. So I wish if we have more programs, and because most of the people who actually trained were trained outside, like myself, we trained outside. And also the problem we have is like when you train in UK, it's completely different system from US. So I remember myself when I went to US after I finished my degrees in UK, it was completely different way of approaching, although it's all infection prevention and control, but I was like really surprised about how they deal with the situation. When you come back and you, for example, get your training from US or get your training from UK or Europe, of course, when you start practicing back in Saudi Arabia, you want to practice exactly what you learned, and you will face like a wave of other people who came from other countries, like people who came from Germany, for example. Infection control is under hospital hygiene. They call it hospital hygiene. So the name is different. The way how they practice is different. The way how they identify HAI is different. So at the end, now we have like a Saudi guidelines, and we try to sit together because we have people work in Ministry of Health, people work in academia and especially in university hospitals, people who work in military hospitals, people work in National Guard Hospital, and there's something called King Faisal Specialist Hospital. So each group of hospital, they have their own way of looking to things. But now, especially after COVID, we all sit together and put the guidelines, that put unified guidelines. So now the differences are very minor, not like before, because before, like, each one tried to stick to the way he actually learned or trained, and he wanted to apply the way how actually was he was exposed to when he was in his graduation graduate program. For example, in US, usually the people who lead the infection control department are the ID consultants. But in UK, they can be ID at the same time. They can be a microbiologist, clinical microbiologist, who hold actually the FRC path, which is the 5 years program to become a consultant. So they do actually have a good training in infection control. So you can tell it's two different ways. The Americans look from the clinical science from a clinical point of view when they deal with infection, while the UK, they look from the microbiology point of view, so they have to go through the lab, so the cultures, and see how they deal. So it's completely two different ways of looking to infection and manage the infection. So it's fun, but at the same time, there is a lot of things that make you confused about how to take action or what exactly you need to do. But now, actually, after this problem of COVID, a lot of things settled, and now we actually have like one language we can all talk to understand each other.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I have so many more questions. I feel like we're, pretty much wrapping up out of time, right? But I have so many more questions than I started with. So I really appreciate that.
No, I know. Same here. I think this is so interesting. And the more that we all talk together and learn from each other, again, I just think that is so valuable. And I know I'm coming into this, I'm just entering the global space. Brenna, I'm everywhere now, and I am just learning so much. And it's so humbling when you step outside of your way of working, your way of doing things, and you see that it's not the same way everywhere. There's not a universal way to do this. And I think us all coming together and having these conversations, it's just so important and so valuable for us to learn from each other and really build this together and figure out what do we want the future to look like. Because I think, we are the future, and we have the opportunity to shape the next generation of infection preventionists.